Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McKusick, and tonight we continue with our expectation series looking ahead to the 2026 season at two younger Ravens, Emory Jones and Chandler Rivers. Both of them, honestly, pretty significant seasons for both of them. That's true of most NFL players, but joining me to talk about them is Matt Ruff. Matt, how you doing?
Ken, doing pretty good. Miles Garrett traded out of the division today, so a lot of stuff still happening in the football world. It's amazing how the football, the NFL just monopolizes the media. Doesn't matter what time of year it is. You know, people say, hey, this is kind of the off season. This is the time to take vacations. And then, you know, you see what could be one of the biggest trades that's really ever happened. So just interesting to continue to follow. Good to see that the O's have played a little bit better over the last few weeks, too. So life is good.
There's an article in the Wall Street Journal today about Major League Baseball potentially getting into a lockout that could cost them the entire season next year, with the owners pressing hard now for a salary cap. And they've made a proposal to the players on that. It's absolutely critical for the sport that they get this done. And frankly, I'm at a point as an Orioles fan, even with a young team right now, so there would be danger to the players that the Ravens have currently and losing a, you know, potentially a good spot. I'm willing to lose the entire season if that's what it takes to get a salary cap in place.
Yeah, and it's you know, I've heard proposals around a cap and a floor, which I find to be pretty interesting. I think one of the most ridiculous things about baseball is you can have a team with a payroll of $42 million and a team with a payroll of $400 million. Yep. It's just absolutely ridiculous. And I think one of the things that draws us all to football, yeah, it's a bit faster paced than baseball. You and I are both huge O's fans, though, is just the disparity between the payrolls. It just doesn't make any sense. So I would love to see them get something figured out. I would love a cap and a floor. I don't know exactly what it should be, but I'm with you, Ken. I think it absolutely needs to happen. And, you know, just seeing what the Dodgers have done, it's just not that interesting to me. In football, you can have a team from Pittsburgh or Baltimore be better than the teams from New York and LA, you know, and
or
there's
Green
just
Bay. Yeah.
Green Bay, you know, Jacksonville might be decent this year. It's just so much more interesting than what baseball's been. And people will argue, oh, well, look, you know, this team's made the playoffs and this team's made the playoffs. Yeah, sure. The A's have made the playoffs. The Twins have made the playoffs, right? The Rays, but they haven't won anything.
Well, do me a favor, by the way, I don't want to see the Oriole game in the background, the reflection in your mirror. It's going to give me away the end and I want to catch it later. I appreciate that. I can still see it if you lean forward. So be careful from there.
Okay there we go. There we go.
Even seeing that it's over might be good or bad. I don't know. But anyway, it's very much the players are the ones right now who are handpicking examples of success. As opposed to truly trying to look at, has there been a general success in paying for an advantage in this league? And there has been, and that's been something I don't think is good for baseball. And baseball, frankly, has instituted a number of rules changes that should really help the game be more interesting if they just will, go the last mile and get the salary cap in place. But a lot of the other things they've done to improve the game, I think, have generally been good. I think there's still more to be done, but I think the pitch clock, I think the pitch challenges were tremendous. And in fact, they're even setting the standard that the NFL could go to an even greater degree. The NFL is probably a little bit ahead of them still because they now have the first down spots that they're doing directly with the Hawkeye method, and they have some of the other things. But, review obviously is similar in both sports. But I think baseball has done some good things. I want them to do the salary cap because it's not going to work for a Baltimore team, that's for sure, to win under the current methods. Also, divisionally, I mean, you don't have a lot of fairness. We need to get back to football here. So, Emory Jones and Chandler Rivers. Let's start with Emory Jones, 91st pick overall in 2025. The season primarily lost due to injury for him. It prevented him from practicing for really about half a season. I remember, I think he was about week five, he was back and practicing with the team, might have been slightly after that, but then it was a while before he could pass block. And so that's not really practicing with the team at that point. So he really lost, a solid portion of the season developmentally, and it's really starting from scratch in year two.
Yeah, and I think it came out that the Ravens knew that he needed the shoulder surgery when he was drafted. I think we were unclear about that at the time, but I think it did come out that that was the case. Super odd pick. You know, there's the Ravens have definitely been in and out of the injured player pool when it comes to the draft of the past few years. If you think of Ajabo, Voorhees, Emory Jones, and it's really hard when you lose that first developmental year. I mean, you have these players for, especially if you're not going to, you know, do the fifth year option on the first round pick or a franchise tag, you have them for 4 years. So that's your value. And every subtraction from that four years really takes away from the value of the player. So, you know, when it comes to Emory, this is, like you said, this is a huge year for him because he can either really get his career on track and become a player that could be in the league for 5, 8+ years, or you could slip further into the background and become one of those players that gets lost after maybe that third season on the roster, bumbles around on the practice squad or two, and then doesn't really ever make it. So this is a crossroads season for him. And I think that having him come out with a strong season would really get his career back on the right track.
Yeah, one thing that's really not clear is exactly where he's going to play for the Ravens, because the Ravens' offensive line seems to be set right now. And what we're basically seeing is that at left tackle you have Stanley, and Vincent is the very clear backup there, which is important, obviously, for Jones is not the backup at left tackle. At least let's put it that way. Neither is Rosengarten. At left guard, John Simpson is the front runner. I don't know exactly if he's going to make the team or not, but he's, you know, probably the second team left guard right now. I don't know. I don't think the Ravens really want to pay the $3.7 million or so that he's now going to earn. At center, they have a three or even four-way fight, depending on who you believe, between Pinter, Bullock, Gwynn, and some people include Dawkins in that group. I don't really. I think it's the top three now. We're fighting it out. And there's a possibility it could still go outside the organization. Mm-hmm. A right guard, they have Ioane, and no, ain't no one knocking him out. So that's not where Emory Jones is going to play other than as a backup. And then right tackle is Rosengarten, who was probably their best lineman last year. So when you talk about the five, I mean, we know who they are. And there was talk of Emory Jones playing center at some point, which was utter crap. Mm-hmm. So he'll be a right guard or right tackle backup this year. I think he might well get playing time, but it's not clear to me that there's a path to any significant playing time this year if the Ravens enjoy the kind of line continuity they have in recent seasons.
Yeah, I would agree. So he's got good size, right? He's 6'5", around 315 pounds, give or take. I'll be curious to see if he put on more weight in the offseason. I think I heard Jeff Zeribek say recently that he thought Emory looked a little bit bigger. Ken, I'm not sure if you've seen, when you looked at him, did you see anything different, or was it hard to tell?
I just looked today. For starters, I'd say he doesn't even really look 6'5". He looks kind of a little smallish relative to other linemen. He definitely has more of a lean build than I really took when I made my draft notes last year, because I really was leaning into the notion that he had more of a pear shape. I would not say that's true. I would say he looks more like a tackle than like a guard. He's not, you know, it's 50 shades of gray in between, of course, but he's not all the way to one side or the other, more towards a tackle. And I think, you know, in a lot of cases, that's exactly what the Ravens need. They need a swing player. And you can't afford your fourth player on the roster to be a pure tackle. And the Ravens have three pure tackles right now. They're three guys who aren't going to play anywhere else but there. And Jones, it's good to have him on the roster, and particularly on the active game day roster, to be a guy who can play both positions.
Yeah, I agree with you, Ken. I think I've always seen him as more of a tackle build. But he's got good arm length. He's got decent weight. You know, he's got decent size. I do think that he could play guard if he needed. I think for him, a lot of it just comes down to his technique, right? How has his technique improved, whether it be at right tackle or right guard? I'm not sure I really buy him much at the center position either. I think that they want a more mobile player there. But, you know, when it comes to Emory, you know, he's going to have to get better at pass blocking. He's going to have to get better at run blocking. I think there's a lot of stuff that he could work on. I wish it kind of stunk that he was hurt that first season, because it really just took away from some of the commentary we could have gotten around him. You know, they're just, he didn't play, he was recovering from the injury, and we just didn't get to hear all that much information from him. So, you know, he got into a couple games last year, but it really wasn't many snaps in the games that he played. And it, you know, it's almost like a blank slate when it comes to him coming into the league here.
I look at the what's happened during this offseason. The acquisition of John Simpson is one that it's a big knock on Voorhees. Don't get me wrong. Huge knock on Andrew Voorhees that basically almost boots him out the door in terms of the value relative to what he's done. And they want an attacking offensive line, and that's something that you know, I think you'd find that Simpson is more of that guy than Voorhees is. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, it's not a good thing for Jones either, because Jones could have been the backup choice at left guard, and that might have been a reasonable situation. It might have even been one where they'd have taken another chance on Voorhees for, say, four more games into the season to see what he's got, or half a season, whatever. And then they decide Emory Jones is the replacement there. And if they had to, because of injury, go to their fourth tackle, then they could have pulled Jones out of left guard and put in a different player there, probably Voorhees again, or another guard that they drafted, for example, you know, Bjornstad or whatever it might be. But it does not, I have to say his name right, Bjornstad, but it does not look good for Jones that they actually went out and got Simpson for 3 years. It plugs up a guard spot. And you know, even though he's a right side player, and it looks like now he'll back up those positions, I don't think it looks good for him.
Yeah, and I mean, I was fairly shocked at the 3 years, $30 million that Simpson got. You know, that Simpson has a lot of positive attributes, but he also has an unbelievable penalty rate, which you've done a great job of breaking down. And you know, I don't think he's the best player from a technique perspective. I'm hoping Dwayne Ledford can really tee him up and maybe help just make him a bit better, well-rounded player. But to see, I mean, I don't think any Ravens fan, if they were honest, saw a John Simpson reunion in the cards this offseason. And if someone said to you, Ken, John Simpson is getting re-signed to the Ravens, could you have come close to guessing 3 for $30 for him? Like that kind of blew me away.
Not only would I not have guessed that, I'd have been very upset by the notion to start with. I mean, for starters, the way you give yourself a better team is by eliminating your biggest weakness with a player who's well above the league average. Mm-hmm. Okay. And if you're going to go into free agency and dip your toes in, do something like that. And that can kind of did that with Trey Hendrickson, only their player there might not have been the worst by nearly as much. In the case of Voorhees and Falele, both players who didn't play well last year, there's no getting around that. Problem is that Simpson didn't play a lot better. He played some better. He's an upgrade, but you know, even getting like a league average player, I don't think that's what John Simpson is. So I think they paid a lot of money for a fairly low benefit insurance policy.
Yes.
Or a high deductible insurance policy. What do you want to call
it? Agreed. And I don't know. I'm still finding it puzzling. I'm hoping that Dwayne Ledford, and I'm probably going to use that name several times on this portion of the podcast, I'm really hoping he sees something that he can clean up. But you know, the thing with Simpson is Simpson's been around the block. He's been on several teams, which means he's had access to several different coaching staffs, which means that the number of things that could be unlocked dwindles, in my opinion, right? Because as each coaching staff that you go to, you know, okay, I get it. You go to a team, maybe that coaching staff and style may not resonate with you. But when you've been on a handful of teams, you don't have that excuse anymore, right? So the John Simpson move is just so puzzling to me. You know, like you said, it's a marginal step up. And you know, I really do think it gets to the point where I don't know how you can have Andrew Voorhees on the roster, that they're in such a cap crunch next year, which you talked about on one of your recent Friday morning GMs. Mm-hmm. I don't know how you can go in with that $3.7 or so million cap hit for a backup guard. It just doesn't seem like it's in the cards. Now I wonder if the hope is that he plays well enough this preseason that you can trade him for a sixth round pick or something to that effect.
We're talking Voorhees now. Yeah.
Voorhees, yes.
Possible.
Yep. But, you know, linemen are always in short supply, but you also risk him getting hurt and you having to bear the whole charge for Voorhees.
Oh, good point. Year.
So, you know, it's not without risk, you know, having these guys stick around. I also think, you know, Broderick Washington, he seems like an obvious candidate to cut, and you run the risk with him being around. And then Justice Hill, I think that the cost for Hill is fairly high, and him coming off a neck injury. I'm surprised that Hill hasn't had his salary reduced. Frankly, I'm surprised Marlon hasn't either.
Marlon. Yeah.
Yeah.
So in the case of Hill, you know, once they made that decision with regard to he's coming back and the bonus is paid, now there's no going back on it.
Right.
So they don't really have an option on that. The other one is Ronnie Stanley. I mean, they already accelerated deferred his salary into bonus again, such that now the Ravens can't get rid of him even in 27. So it was a 3-year deal for $60 million, and it could have been a 2-year deal for $44 million. Now they can't get rid of him. And that's a case where they might really want to. They might really want to give the job to Carson Vinson next year. And maybe they can. Maybe the truth of the matter is Stanley will become a part-time player. He'll lose the job at some point in 2027 to Vinson, or he'll play great. And that's fine too, either way. Mm-hmm. But you know, you don't want to have it could be either, and you're paying him $20 million. You prefer just to have Carson Vinson be your guy. If that was the case, at least I would. Anyway, I wanted to get back to Simpson for a second, because by PFF, if you look at the guys who played 50% of the snaps, and I don't want to get into what the definition of that is that I'm talking about again, because you've heard me say it a lot of times, it involves a lot of words, but he finished 39th out of 57 at guard, is both a pass blocker and a run blocker. So he's in the bottom third in approximately, maybe about the 35th percentile, let's say that, in both categories. That's not someone you pay $10 million for. I'd probably rather take the chance on Voorhees again, even though he's much closer to the bottom, at $3.7 million than go to Simpson.
Yeah. That's been puzzling to me. And I can't for the life of me understand it. And I think for Simpson, it's 3 for 30, but I think the first $20 million is guaranteed. So you can't even move on from Simpson after this year, if I remember correctly. So it just seems like such a steep contract to move up marginally from Voorhees. And again, this is where you really have to hope that they're seeing something. It's very hard to say if I go back a couple months ago that, you know, John Simpson on the bingo card for 3 for 30 was in the cards.
Yeah. I mean, it's a craftily negotiated contract by Simpson, I would say. They have $1 million of cap loss if he's cut next year, which means they almost certainly won't do it. But they could make him a backup, I suppose. And it's $17.5 million of his salary is fully guaranteed. And just to confirm, yeah, his third year base salary is $10 million, and then they would have.
Right. So if you play him for 2 years, you're paying him the 20, right? If that last year is 10.
I believe that is correct.
Yeah.
Yes. Cap saving is 10 in year three. Exactly correct. So that could end up being the way of it. He might be here for 2 years. Gives the Ravens a little more time with the draft. And that's when they got him, was before the draft to do it. Of course, by picking up a player like that, they gave up at least some quality in terms of the comp pick they got as well. So it wasn't like that was the only cost. That's similar to Trey Hendrickson too, by the way. I mean, they signed Trey Hendrickson for a bunch of money. They got a pretty good deal in terms of the contract, I think, but they did cost him a third round draft pick to do it. There's no getting around that. So
Ken, if you're Dwayne Ledford and you see Emory Jones here, what do you think you can do with him technique wise that would improve him as a player? Is there something that sticks out to you that he needs more coaching on? I mean, Emory came from LSU and they have pretty solid offensive line coaching there. I think that's one of the reasons why the Ravens even were scouting him, is because they like the coaching staff. But if you're Ledford, what is it that you're trying to flip or change this year to make him more effective?
So that's a great question. And in watching the offensive line practice together, one of the big differences is just how many like wide zone exchanges they have in practice. So they do combination blocking. And combination blocking, when you hear me talk about it, probably more generally involves running some sort of power scheme or power gap, or effectively that we're talking about the same thing, where you have a 2-on-1 block at some point in the line of scrimmage where you're actually trying to move alignment. Now, most times you can't do better than stalemate or perhaps a positionally advantage yourself versus an individual lineman. Moving a 1-on-1 is very difficult to do. So you need a 2-on-1 to kind of get that done. And that's a combination block is what starts that. And then a typical power scheme, that you have one player who's the climber, who basically works on that guy until he gets him a little bit off balance. He senses the off balance. He moves to level two and picks up a second block, while the first player hopefully finishes that first block. Okay, so that's more typically that's two guys each going at kind of a 45-degree angle towards a player that is lined up in a gap between them. Okay, so important concept there. The second one is when you do these zone exchanges. In that case, you've got one player who's moving out to the right, for example, on a run to the right, and he'll block somebody who's you know, potentially that can cross his face or is in his path, and then he'll release him to a trailing player who's one of the elephants on parade, as they say, coming down laterally along that line of scrimmage as he climbs and tries to find somebody around that corner to block for additional work. So the exchanges are a little bit different, and much more of practice seems to be based on those sort of exchanges than is based on traditional gap and power combination blocking that we would see under normal circumstances. So just that, I would say that Emory Jones, if he can become a player who can be effective in a wide zone scheme and you know, a scheme that if they run more zone this year is effective, I think that's an addition. Let me be careful here. Nothing is on the same level as pass blocking. For starters, you have zone blocking and power blocking, and both teams do everything else. And then in its own category is kind of short yardage blocking, where you have to submarine and to use different techniques to get, you know, to force the other team not to gain an advantage over you that can allow them to penetrate. So it's only a portion of your run blocking. And then your run blocking is only maybe half as valuable, maybe realistically, maybe even slightly less than your pass blocking overall. If you think of the relationship between on-base percentage and slugging percentage, 2-to-1 is a pretty reasonable relationship between those two. And I think pass blocking to run blocking, given the amount of leverage that are on pass blocking plays, I think it's that kind of a difference. So when you're talking about fixing something that is some fraction of 1/3 of his total, are we talking a sixth, a ninth? You know, what are we talking about? It's not the biggest thing in the world. It's a nice to have. That's all it really is. What's really going to make Emory Jones a better player is if Ledford can teach him to use his length well as a pass blocker. That's what's going to make all the difference in the world. And I think he has some value to the Ravens. He'll be on as a sixth offensive lineman. Again, if you look at the leverage on those plays, they're going to be mostly first and second down plays, a few short yardage plays where they don't have the tight end anymore to in Ricard to be a guy who would take that role. But I don't think there's the total universe of contributions he can make as a run blocker are nearly as significant as what he can have as a pass blocker.
Yeah, for sure. Pass blocking is king. And, you know, I think that if we can see him a decent amount, maybe in the first half of the preseason games, hopefully that just gives us more data to go off of, right? Like, we need to see him against different body types. We need to see him, like you said, running power, running zone, right? There's all teams run combinations of it. Sure, they have, you know, they have preferences and they maybe do more of the other, but all teams kind of run a mix of a lot of the same stuff these days. So can we actually get some data on him? Right. And I think that, you know, that will at least tell us more about what he can do. It'll also, you know, be able to see how his body has been remade, right? He had that shoulder surgery. You don't want to ever hear a lineman having shoulder surgery. Right. So we got to see how he's, you know, coming into this season ready.
Yeah. You've hit on two critical things: his technique and body sculpting or mass growth or whatever you want to call it, you know, strength, functional strength. You know, how does he advance? Let's jump right into that with what's a good season for Emory Jones for you.
Yeah, so a good season for Emory Jones is He makes the active roster and is available for most of the games, 14, 15 plus games, and serves as an average to above average backup at the right tackle and right guard position. That's my short and sweet. I would say to add on to that, he sees time in a backup role in games in which the Ravens are significantly ahead and can maybe play a few fourth quarters that gives the team a little bit more information in going into future years.
Okay, I think we're very similar here. So I said active for 14 plus games, settles in as a primary backup at both right guard and right tackle, plays 100 plus snaps on a rotational or emergency basis at or near the league average. And I'd say most round three and later linemen do start with a C-minus season under optimal circumstances. And normally that would have been last year. It could easily be this year for Emory Jones, that just optimally, if he were to basically grade out slightly below the league average, that would be just fine. But I think a minimum for the good season is that the Ravens have to really believe from his practice, from his what playing time he does get, that he's a central figure in the 2027 line plans, even if that all that means is that he's a right side backup for another year and maybe the sixth offensive lineman that they use in six man packages. So if that's all, I can live with that. I mean, it's not a good third round pick if that's all he ends up being for 4 years. But after 2027, Rosengarten could be gone. Mm-hmm. And it could be that the Ravens need to get younger at right tackle, and Emory Jones might end up being the guy in 2028, which will be his final year of his rookie deal.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that Emory is going into year two, but Rosengarten is going into year three. So there's not that much distance between them. You know, you like to say sand in the hourglass, but you know, Rosengarten's, you know, most likely going to be starting at right tackle this year and right tackle next year, but they don't own the rights to him after that. So if you have Rosengarten play this year and next year, then you only have Emory under contract for 1 year after that.
Yeah, I mean, it does become a question of how exactly does Emory fit in your plans, because Ioane will still be around for 4 years at this point, mm-hmm. and Rosengarten for two. But if they re-sign him, then I'm not sure where Emory fits on this team. I mean, if all he is a sixth lineman and a terrific sub, I think he's going to want to look for greener pastures to see if there's an option, or at least he's going to consider all offers at the end of that fourth season. And he wouldn't be a guy that the Ravens could sign early, by the way. I don't think they'd have a chance to realistically to sign him after year three. The reason would be they were imminently going to lose Rosengarten in free agency. They knew it. Mm-hmm. And so they instead try and sign Emory Jones, say, hey, Emory, you're our starting right tackle now. But I think if they do re-sign Rosengarten after year three, which I'm kind of expecting, then I think we could see the handwriting on the wall for Emory Jones. Could be traded, could be a case where, you know, they keep him for a backup for the fourth season, they get some value out of him that way, and then they allow him to walk and get the comp pick. It won't be much because, you know, he's good. He's not going to have a ton of value in the UFA market if he hasn't really played by then.
Right. Yeah. And I think that the Rosengarten discussion is kind of interesting because they have him under contract for two more years. That's the same amount of time they have Lamar under contract for. So, you know, you really need to figure out what you're doing with the future of Lamar, because frankly, none of the other players on the roster really matter all that much if you don't have Lamar, because
that's right.
Lamar is the one who is the straw that's stirring every drink. Not that every other player isn't contributing, not that every other player is important, not trying to diminish the significance, but this team with Lamar and this team without Lamar, we've kind of seen what that looks like. And if you're not going to have Lamar, and you might not have Lamar after this year, right? If you don't think you can sign him long term and you can move him for, you know, a couple first round picks or something to that effect, you might have to do it, right? There's a real chance that this could be the last year of Lamar in Baltimore. None of us are hoping for that. You know what I mean? Certainly want him to stay. But, you know, as you start looking at who's going to become a free agent in the next year or two, it's Lamar is the first domino, and he's the size of the Empire State Building. Everyone else is just a regular domino at that
point. Right. That's right. In relative size, I completely agree with that. They've got to get that contract figured out. And I don't even want to think about what happens if it doesn't get figured out. But anyway, they need to get it done. All right. So let's move on and talk about a great season here for Emory Jones.
All right. So the great season is Emory Jones takes advantage of an injury that happens during the preseason or the regular season and gets at least a few games in a starting role at right tackle or right guard and plays at a league average level or above. I think it's that simple for me. If he can put a few starting full games on tape against a few different schemes and body types and proves that he can be average, it can be C minus, right? But if he can do that for a few starts, I think that that really helps him become a part of the Ravens' plans going into 2027.
All right, I'm with you on that entirely. And mine is very similar. Takes a starting job at some point with some combination of practice, injury, or underperformance of the incumbent. There is a chance there that we could have underperformance from John Simpson that creates an opportunity during the season for Emory Jones. I will say this, Emory Jones did not get the job with two very significant underperformers last year. So they went with continuity and they didn't make the change, and they had the guy on hand, and the guy that they had on hand was a guy that Warhop probably was pretty interested in drafting. Mm-hmm. Warhop is the one that you mentioned earlier had liked, I think it's Brad Davis, the previous LSU coach, mm-hmm. who was an offensive line guy there. I'm not 100% sure on the name, but that's my recollection of it. So I think he could play 350 plus snaps at approximately a league average level. I think I'm looking at the 80th percentile. I could see that as a possibility. I don't think that's too high a stretch notion for that. He needs to handle pulling and zone blocking solidly. So he's getting lots of zone blocking practice right now. And he'll get a lot during the preseason because he's got to get most of his playing time then to prepare himself to be ready to be a backup during the regular season. And the Ravens have had very good success in the past getting guys to learn how to pull who weren't great athletes. And you've heard me say that any number of times on this show. That's probably on the bingo card by now. But it is something that, he has to learn how to do properly himself if he's going to play left guard. Even if he's going to play right guard, he really... This show is sponsored by BetterHelp.com. For some, summer is their favorite season. Travel picks up, kids are out of school, and adventure is the focus. For others, juggling it all can be tough, can make you feel overwhelmed, and can make you count down the minutes until the kids are back in school. I know I look forward to summer as a time to take a break, but as a self-employed person, time spent away from my work is time I stress over wasting. That's where BetterHelp comes in. BetterHelp is a quality therapist who work according to a strict code of conduct and are fully licensed in the U.S. BetterHelp does the initial therapist matching for you so you can focus on your therapy goals. A short questionnaire helps identify your needs and preferences, and their 12-plus years of experience and industry-leading match fulfillment rate means they typically get it right on the first time. If you aren't happy with your match, switch to a different therapist at any time. With over 30,000 therapists, BetterHelp is the world's largest online therapy platform, having served over 6 million people globally, and it works. With an average rating of 4.9 out of 5 for a live session based on 1.7 million client reviews. You don't have to say yes to everything this summer. Find support in therapy. Sign up and get 10% off at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com. Needs to know how to do it if the Ravens run a fair amount of power. And I think the Ravens, they've always liked getting a guard on the move. I can't say I know what Doyle's offense is going to look like at all. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's going to be a ton of pulling and a number of counters we've had in the past that, are two-man pulls effectively. I don't know what they'll attempt to do, but I'm interested to see. And he's certainly one of the guys who's on the fence right now in terms of potential value. One big thing I want as an improvement from him is he learns to use his hand independently to take an advancement as a pass blocker. Jones has been a guy, particularly in college, who was a play both flippers at the same time pinball player, a guy who kind of struck with both his arms. I want to see him use his hands independently better. And then if all that happens, the Ravens' only quandary is going to be where does he fit best in 2027 as a starter. It's not going to be whether or not he belongs on this team or not. It's going to be, do they have a starting spot for him? Does he just replace Simpson immediately and maybe eat some dead money or use a multi-year, one of the pre-June 1 releases to free up some cash from a Simpson release? You'd have options in how you do things, push some out further. But anyway, I'd be you know, excited by that as a great season. All right, let's move on and talk about Chandler Rivers a little bit. The fifth round pick, number 162 this year, did not have a great coverage season at Duke this last season, despite the fact Duke won their first ACC championship since 1962. And it's 64 years. That's really incredible. But then we think about how long it's been since Maryland's won a any kind of a ACC championship in football. It's been a very long time. ACC, then Big Ten, obviously.
Right.
Did not have a good year. And I'm going to go quickly through his coverage metrics last year. Had 7.8 yards per target, an 85 passer rating against, and 241 snaps per penalty. That's actually pretty good. The other two are not. And being a smaller guy, he's going to naturally be pushed into a slot narrative from the very start. And I think that is where he'll end up playing for the Ravens.
Yeah, I think that when you look at his size, so he's about 5'10", 185 pounds, and his arms are sub 30 inches,
yep.
which is pretty – I mean, I think it's 29.4.
Yep.
That is very short. I think Marlon is 32 and a quarter, just for reference. So, you know, there is a huge, huge difference. And – you know, at basically every position, arm length gives you an advantage. Ken, you talk about that all the time. It's super important. It's more important than I think a lot of casual fans realize, but he doesn't have long arms. The weight is very slender. The height is not tall at all. So he's going to have to get by on a lot more than any physical attribute. My hope is that similar to Dwayne Ledford, Mike Mickens was brought in to run the secondary. He was at Notre Dame for a handful of years. A ton of really good defensive backs have come through Notre Dame, including Kyle Hamilton. I am really hoping that some of these guys that are on the roster or that were taken in the draft this year are going to benefit from the coaching. I think the secondary is going to get a huge boost from Mike Mickens and also Jesse Minter and Anthony Weaver. So I'm hoping that whatever they see in Chandler Rivers, when the pick was made, I can't say I was all that thrilled. I wasn't against it. I don't know every guy in the draft. I don't have the time to study it as much as some of you all do. But you know, it definitely wasn't someone that I was expecting to be picked there. So they've got to see some traits they like. They've got to see some things that they think they can really coach up. And you know, He's turning 23 in October, so he's not 21. You know what I mean? He's someone who's been around the block a little bit, and he's going to have to take to the coaching pretty quickly.
Yeah, he's a year older than you would normally have as a rookie player, and there's some players who even be younger than that. But he's a year older than most. That's not terrible. He's not, that doesn't represent some huge developmental stunting or anything the way it does for, say, Bjornsson, who is going to be 26 in October. And there is no tomorrow for a player like that. He like needs an 80th percentile result just to hang in the league kind of thing. But anyway, with Rivers, getting back to him, decent ball skills. Not great, though. So here's how I look at ball skills for a college draft pick. He had 7 interceptions and 29 passes defensed, but he was targeted a lot in college, 231 total times. So 36 over 231 is going to put it. Well, let me do that. 36 over 231, what's that, about 16%? Yeah, 15.6. 60, let's call it 16%. So the 20% is kind of the acid number for a draftable cornerback. I mean, one of the guys who you'd be excited about getting the draft in the first 3 or 4 rounds, that would typically be the level. And they got him cheaper than that. So maybe in a sense, that's not the end of the world. On the other hand, there's a lot of players with better ball skills, despite the fact he had 7 career interceptions, which is what a lot of people will hang their hat on. Now, I did have only 4 flags in the last 3 seasons to go with 174 targets. So the 241 coverage snaps per penalty is good, but it's not the best you'll see. But the fact that he had more targets than that makes his penalties per target very good. So he did look good in that regard. So Hasn't been a great tackler in his career. Got about a 13% missed tackle rate, and that's in college. It'll almost certainly get worse at the pro level. So, you know, he's a guy kind of like Caillou Blue Kelly. And I hate to say this because it sounds like I'm trying to make this situation not work out, and that's not how I feel about it. But I had the same kind of reservations about the pick as soon as it's made, is that, yeah, okay, the tape's important, and there's good stuff on tape, and there's particularly great leadership stuff on tape about him. But there just are not the coverage statistics to back it up in either of those two cases. And we already know what happened to Caillou Blue Kelly, unfortunately.
And I think, Ken, if I recall, I'm just guessing and spitballing here, I thought Caillou Blue Kelly's coverage metrics in college were even worse than Rivers.
I think you're right. He in his last year at Stanford, he was playing on a very, very bad football team. And Rivers played on a great football team, mm-hmm. or a good football team. Let's put it that way. And they couldn't cover for him mm-hmm. in regards to that. So, I'll look it up while we're going. But they were worse than 7.9. I or 7.8. If I recall correctly, he was in either the eights or even the low nines.
Yeah, I remember being blown out of my seat by Caillou Blue Kelly's metrics. Nothing about anything in Caillou Blue Kelly's metrics screamed draftable corner. But I think one of the things that we have to factor into the discussion with Chandler Rivers is he was picked in round five. The Ravens, as of recent, if you go back the past few years, Caillou Blue Kelly, Sean Wade, Dellinger last year. I mean, they have a history of guys that have been taken in the fifth, sixth, seventh round who haven't been kept on the roster. So in my opinion, there's, you know, in years past, if you go way back, you know, you're thinking, okay, this guy's drafted in the fifth round. He's got at least a couple years on the roster. I don't really think that's a guarantee. Now, hopefully the coaching staff likes him, right? There's a lot of discussion. You know, DaCosta is always trying to work with the coaches to figure out who do we get on the team, who's going to work well. I'm not saying they want him to go, but I don't know if at 5'10", 185 with 29-inch arms, you know, I could see, you know, some of the other players just playing better than him. And you've only got so many spots on the roster. You know, what are you going to carry, six corners?
Yeah, they have a lot of young corners too. Two of them they liked from last year, and longer beam and Kone, I think they still really like. He's got that aircraft carrier size. Longer beam is a little smaller, and he's a slighter frame, but he's taller also than Rivers. Then if you go after that, they've got TJ Tampa, who is not losing a job to a player like Rivers. I mean, it's just he's a third year player. The Ravens are ready for him to take on more responsibility this year, and they kind of need him to as a fourth corner. I don't see him losing his job, although he is one of the five players, young corners. They have to figure out what they have. Then they have Rivers, and they have Marquise Robinson, who's a name that people are you know, not really considering in their discussion. But to me, he's an aircraft carrier size guy. Didn't play that well at Arkansas. Looked fantastic in the preseason last year. Ravens need to find out what they have with him. And they may think they know already that from practice, he's just not the guy they think is ready to step into a bigger role. But I would like to see him be given a really good ride, including some first half snaps in this preseason, to see if we can get a better read on him.
Right. Do you think that Chandler Rivers' direct competition is Keon Martin?
Keon Martin for a slot role. Martin's in, I don't think Martin's in a real danger, but he is a name I forgot. He's not in a real danger of losing his position, I don't believe. Mm-hmm. Decent special teams player and a slot corner. The problem with Rivers is that both for him and Martin, the slot cornerback role is relatively small. Mm-hmm. You have a starting slot corner who is a big nickel safety who is not giving that job up no matter what.
Right.
And then you have a guy, that guy moves to dime back on third down, which in a good season might be 35% of the snaps. Mm-hmm. In an average season is probably 28% of the snaps. Good season means good game script for the Ravens. They're in the second half of games, they're leading, and they're able to force their opponents into more bad situations. So they're able to just go to the dime earlier when they lead by two or three scores. They have that possibility of playing more dime. But then the guys who are competing for those dime snaps are Humphrey, or by extension, the other guys who could play outside corner instead of Humphrey, meaning Awuzie and Wiggins. Mm-hmm. So if you want to get, it could be literally a choice of, do you want Humphrey and Awuzie, or do you want Humphrey on the outside and either Rivers or Keon Martin at slot? And Martin already had some pretty decent slot play as a rookie. So I think he's, you know, he's in pretty good position to keep that job. But I guess we will, again, that's one of the camp battles we'll see about. Rivers, just in my mind, I think there probably is some, there'll be desire for other teams to try and pick up Rivers, and he'll be poached, whether it's immediately with a claim or soon thereafter as cornerback depth at Tritts. Some other team will want him.
Right. Right. Yeah. The cornerback room definitely has a lot of names there this year. Mm-hmm. And it's always very important for the Ravens. I thought with Marlon, it was odd. They picked up, I think he had a $4 million roster bonus early in the off season, which I think maybe you've mentioned this, Ken, on Friday Morning GM. I think everyone's a little bit puzzled as to the fact that we haven't heard of, you know, Marlon taking even a couple million dollar pay cut.
Well, and that won't happen now. The chance to make that happen was earlier before right. They paid the bonus. So, I'm not the only one. I think multiple members of the media are really surprised by what's happened with regard to his salary, that it wasn't adjusted. I mean, part of it, I don't know what they're hoping for exactly. Kayvon Wallace is kind of a fringe guy in terms of whether or not he should be on the team. I think he's basically here for insurance to get the Ravens through camp at least. And I think he could be a guy that's a veteran practice squad guy that they make a spot of that type for him. But if they wanted to move Humphrey to safety, it's not a good year to do it in terms of who they picked up during the offseason at the cornerback position. But it may be the exact right time to figure out what you have with Marlon Humphrey as a potential safety before you have to, you know, basically put him out there on the open market next March.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's the cornerback room is littered with a ton of questions top to bottom, right? Does Wiggins come back from the offseason surgery and really take that step we're expecting? How does Marlon look? I mean, Marlon was graded as one of the absolute worst corners in the league. Both if you look at, you know, simple stats like yards and receptions given up, but also in some of the advanced metrics, Awuzie, he never played a full season, at least not in the last 5 or 6 years. Then you've got Kone, longer beam, right, coming off massive injuries. You know, you've got Chandler Rivers, who seems kind of like a coin flip. I mean, when you go through the corner position, it almost seems like every single one of them has some sort of big question that's sitting out there. Yeah. And that's what makes this kind of more interesting, because there, you know, you got the whole new coaching staff. They're going to be looking at players differently than you know, the previous regime did. And, you know, I think a lot of jobs are up for grabs. Like you said, you're not getting rid of Marlon now, not after paying the roster bonus, but, you know, even trying to figure out what's the right position for him. There's a lot to figure out over the next few months for this team.
Yeah. And he's, you know, he might not be the only one who could end up moving to safety. I mean, TJ Tampa, his speed has been questioned all the way along the lines. He's looked tough, and I think he's looked pretty good in camp. He definitely is a hitter. And among the corners, he just looks like a man among boys in terms of strength and you know, ability to get downhill sometimes as well. But that might mean he's a guy who should be moving to safety too. He might not have the ideal, you know, speed to get by. A lot of people said that Mickens and Minter will make it fairly easy for him. You know, he'll play more zone. He'll be coming more downhill. It'll be more about his instincts, his ability to read, than it'll be about his pure speed. All that would be great if true. I'm just not 100% sure that's true. And by the way, if you have a guy who basically has to play downhill from cover three, he probably would play even better at safety and a split field role. Yeah.
Ken, how much do you buy into the new coaching staff making it easier on the secondary players specifically? Do you think there's a lot to be said for that? Or do you think that people are just dreaming a little bit? I don't really have a good read on it.
I think the Ravens have so much riding on it that they have to believe that's the case. Mm-hmm. So in the case of Mickens, they've got a guy who clearly has an outstanding college record of developing cornerback talent at Notre Dame. I don't think there's any question with that. In the case of Minter, I think they have a guy who has made lemons out of lemonade, lemonade out of lemons a few times in the past year with some mediocre players at various positions, certainly at inside linebacker and at corner as well at sometimes. So I think there's still a chance. Mm-hmm.
Are you worried about the corner position going into the year? Obviously, you're always worried yes. because corner, but how do you feel about the position group as a whole before we get into good and great?
Tremendously concerned about depth. It is a position where presumably they could go out to the open market and get somebody at the trade deadline if they had to. If there's a position that could kill the Ravens season, cornerback is one of the ones.
Yeah, agreed. And I'm hoping that we're going to balance it out a little bit with a better pass rush across the board, because that pass rush last year was absolutely sorry and really, really hung the entire secondary out to dry.
Yeah, very much true. Absolutely true. One other thing I want to say about Rivers, and then let's get into what a good season looks like, is that he really had outstanding leaping display on the combine. It was one of the big things, and it could make up the ability to get to the catch point there could make up for the combination of short arms and short stature. I'll tell you right now, I'm a little bit over 6 feet tall, and Rivers does not look 5'10 to me when I stand across from him at the podium. Mm-hmm. Okay. And we're standing on the same level ground. I do not believe he's a full 5'10 is what I would tell you right now. And I am a little concerned that there's just, you probably can't make up for that component. I think what that does is it means he probably cannot play outside in the NFL. We'll see, but I don't believe he can. The Ravens have had a couple exceptions to that over the years, and they've had some guys who filled in there. I think Lardarius Webb was under five, might have been 5'11 or thereabouts. But the Ravens typically have gone for the aircraft carrier guys who are 6 feet and up, good long arms, weighs close to 200 pounds in some cases. Even in Wiggins' case, they went with a guy with slightly shorter arms who has a very thin frame because they had other characteristics that they liked. But he's over 6 feet tall, so that at least was not a problem.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, the size and the stature is certainly concerning. That we're gonna have to see how he takes to the coaching. That's really gonna be the big step this summer.
What does a good season look like for Chandler Rivers?
A good season is he makes the roster, he plays on special teams, and in a rotational role, he plays in a minimal number of snaps throughout the year. And coming out of this year is at least looked upon as a member of the 53 going into next year at the corner position.
Okay. All right, I didn't include that last part. I said stays healthy through camp in the preseason, secures a spot on the 53, practices well to earn the trust of Mickens and Minter, is the first backup as both dime slot corner and second on the outside after Tampa. Okay, so that would make him effectively the Ravens' fifth cornerback, right? So I guess it would make him their fourth cornerback. Activated for 10-plus games with four-unit special teams role as the bulk of his rookie contributions, plays 50-plus snaps on defense as a rookie with no specific expectation of play quality. So within my good season, I think he's still kind of potentially fighting for a job again in 27, because I don't think his path to playing time is made any clearer by that kind of a season. So I'd love for that to be the case, but if Hamilton is going to be here, and he is, in 2027, then that just takes away the primary position and most of the snaps at it for him.
Yeah, I do think for it to be a good season for Rivers as a fifth round draft pick, I think he's got to be on the active roster for the full year.
Okay.
I do think that's important, because you would think that a player that you're taking at that point, he's got to be vouched for by some of the coaches. Right. Yeah. Or someone's got to say they like this. Hey, we can tweak that. Right. There's got to be something there. I'm hoping that the Ravens are going to get to the point where they don't have to discard as many of these low round picks. Now, they've had a lot of picks, so that happens. But I don't know. For me, it's important for it to say it's a good season. he has to at least have been on the roster for the full year.
Okay. So that can go two ways, by the way. I completely agree with you, by the way. And maybe that's right for it to be a 60th percentile season. I think he's going to be among the names of, he might not make the team this week kind of thing when he's on the 53. But today, and we're recording this the night of 6-2, so OTAs were today. One of the big things that I've been harping on now for a long time is that Keandre Jackson needs to put together some defensive tape, some ability that gives the coaches hope that he can play the back end adequately so that he can increase his value and become an NFL survivor. He's already at the point where I think 1 year of outstanding special teams, the way he did play this last year, could potentially carry him through his entire rookie contract. Mm-hmm. But he just had a day-to-day that was spectacular. He had an interception on a tip ball where he was the coverage player. Ball got tipped up by Cuevas and he intercepted it. He dropped another interception where he was in position to make it off a tip. That was good to say. And he had another pass defense on the play. That's an incredible amount to happen in one day of 11 on 11s for one defensive back. That just is very, very uncommon to have, you know, three plays on the ball made like that. That kind of a day, it has to help him in terms of getting a better shot. And it might help him. It might help the Ravens be emboldened for Kayvon Wallace not to make the team, be kept instead as a practice squad vet guy that they keep around as an insurance policy that way. And that could make room for one more corner on the team, which in the end could help Rivers, or it could help somebody else, whether that's Marquise Robinson or Longer Beam, whoever might be below the line, so to speak, if they keep a seventh corner.
That's incredibly exciting. I've been thinking, how can someone who has that much talent on special teams not find a way to play it, to become at least a serviceable backup split field safety, right? We're not asking for Ed Reed here. We're just saying, as a backup split field safety, the guy clearly, I mean, his ability to block that field goal against the Steelers, his ability to get down the field, his ability to make the tackles and be in the right position on special teams. I know they're completely different, but they're also not completely different, right? Like he clearly has the ability to learn, get coaching, look at film and apply it on special teams. You know, like he's one of the people who I'm hoping in the offseason is just getting every ounce of coaching he can. And all we're asking for is a serviceable backup, you know?
So the three guys at the podium today, there's all three coordinators were at the podium today. And that Anthony Levine started it off. Four or five questions about Keandre Jackson. I get to ask the first one. I felt lucky given that everybody else followed me up with more questions about Keandre. But if you think about which player on the Ravens is the most like Anthony Levine, it's Keandre Jackson. He's a safety. He's looking for some sort of a role on defense. He was frustrated for years by Dean Pease and the inability to get it because Dean never played dime. And Anthony's natural backup role was as a dime back. Now, Anthony is very versatile for the Ravens. He played slot corner. He played on the back end. He played dime. He played a lot of different positions as the Ravens needed. He played quarter some. But it wasn't a case where he had an easy path. So he was fighting with the co-cap special teams role he had to also make a defensive contribution and do this. Keandre Jackson took a huge step today. He took an enormous step. And I hope it's not already done by the time this podcast airs. There are two more practices between now and when this will air.
Right.
That we might have additional information, but he took a very big positive step. I cannot overstate the importance of what happened today, but the thing that Levine said at the podium about him was, you know, I said, you know, actually this was one of the follow-up questions, was, do you see him as being very similar to you kind of thing? And he said, no, I really don't. He's a much better athlete. You know, he's far more physical. He's, you know, he's might be quicker too. He, you know, he had multiple things that he thought, you know, he's really got to do better out of what he's got than I did kind of thing.
Wow. Great to hear.
Yeah, it was really good to hear. Okay, so great season for Rivers.
All right, great season for Rivers is he earns more playing time. I still don't think it's going to be a lot because I think there's a lot of guys ahead of him, but he earns playing time after playing well in the preseason. And when he plays, at least plays at an average level and guarantees himself a spot on the 53 in 2027.
Okay. That's, again, I've got something very similar. I said camp and preseason leave no doubt about his spot on the 53. He's active for 14 plus games with value on special teams driving that total of games played. Plays 50 to 200 snaps on defense as game script allows or injuries dictate. And I don't think you can go only on game script to get close to 200 snaps. You could do it with 50, but I don't know that you can get 200 this way. And for at least some part of the season, he's the Ravens' primary dime slot cornerback. So when they have the dime package on, six defensive backs are on, he's the slot corner in those packages. His play is near the league average and provides hope for more contributions in 2027. And we look ahead, the Ravens have two significant departures coming in 27, in Humphrey and Awuzie. Mm-hmm. And the Ravens could let anywhere between zero and two of those go, but I don't think there's a pretty particularly high chance that it's zero. Mm-hmm. I think that somebody's going to have to go. Voss and I have had this discussion before, but I kind of believe that the $5 million third corner, even though the Ravens had good success with Darby and Awuzie and finding a guy who could really help the team, that guy is probably not going to be on the Ravens going forward, given Lamar Jackson's contract. They'll have to do belt tightening in a lot of places. They'll have to figure out if they can, you know, take $15 million roughly out of inside linebacker and by not paying Roquan. And they'll have to have some other places too where they save money. That's not going to nearly do it. Right now they're $80 million over the cap for next year, a lot of which is Lamar Jackson, but not all of it. And and Marlon Humphrey, though, isn't any part of that. Okay, that's not true. He is part because there's void years. Yeah, there's void years on his deal, and there'll still be some dead money in his contract, but he's not signed for next year. He's not a player under contract.
Right, that's all sunk.
Yeah, it's all sunk, exactly. So nothing they can do about it. So anyway, Ravens are going to have to go out and find some money, and it's a little bit scary.
That's where, going back to the Voorhees, Broderick Washington, Justice Hill, I didn't think any of those three players made sense at that price, right? Like, even with Justice Hill, you have a running back who's in his late 20s coming off a neck injury. You know, you almost think that that's guaranteed to take a salary reduction. Or Marlon, a corner coming off the worst, you know, the worst year of his career, but also like the worst corner in the league, give or take maybe a couple. Mm-hmm. I just don't know how that's not grounds for, you know, some people are like, oh, you know, take $10 million off his salary. That's not going to happen. That's ridiculous. But, you know, maybe $2.5 million or $3 million. I thought that sounded at least reasonable. And I'm pretty surprised that some of those moves either weren't made, and which means they're not going to be, or haven't been made yet, because the pickle isn't this year. People say, oh, we still have money. Who are we going to sign? Yeah, but you have to look into next year, and we're not in good shape next year.
Right. Yeah. And the Cleveland Browns are just living the dream right now with that. They traded Myles Garrett in the last 24 hours, and they've taken on $47 million in dead money to do it.
Right.
And my immediate reaction when I heard he was traded is, how the hell did they manage to? Well, it's a post June 1 cut, so they pushed a lot of the pain out of 26 and into 27. Mm-hmm. But I was surprised that the Browns had the room to make that move. They sure as hell don't have the room to cut Deshaun Watson under these circumstances, though.
I think what I was reading that they did was he had it may have been a bonus that was due at the beginning of the league year. It was like $30 million. And him and the team agreed to move it to like 6-2 or 6-3. Okay. So that they could make a post June 1st trade and not have that money get paid and then spread over the remainder of his contract.
Right.
So that was him working with them because he obviously wanted to be out. But
yeah,
I actually didn't think it was possible for them to trade him. I didn't know that they shifted this $30 million. I don't think they could have done it without shifting that.
Right. I'm sure you're correct. And so the Rams pick up that roster bonus is what this amount means, and then it's spread over the rest of his contract. All right. Well, great stuff. I have to go out and study that more. The Browns guys I contacted said the same thing. I have to study that to understand exactly how they did this. So it's interesting that you're the one who figured this out. McFarland gave me some good information on it too. So that was, you know, positive, but anyway, here we are. Big year for both of these players. Matt, always a pleasure talking football with you. Tell folks where they can talk football with you online.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at 20 Kid Rock.
All right. Other folks out there, give the YouTube channel a chance, please. That's same thing. It's a film study on YouTube. And comment if you wouldn't mind being part of the community there, but like and subscribe. I'd like that more. And as always, take a look at the shorts that are out there and see if that's content that you like. If it is, I'll do more of it. Otherwise, love to hear from your questions on hashtag film study mailbag. Matt, thanks again for coming on.
Thanks a lot, Ken.
We'll talk to you next time on Film Study.